to the House of Pop Culture. My name is Anthony Donovan.
I'm Amy Meredith.
Durwood Murray.
And Joe Reese.
And we talk about anything and everything pop culture related, because our opinions are somehow important and fun to listen to.
Mine is.
Yeah, no one could see that, Durwood.
Now, I gotta tell you, a long time ago, a movie came out called High Fidelity, which we all love. And in that movie, the characters, John Cusack and Jack Black played, I have the poster, they all made top five lists, which it was true to life, because all geeks do that, and we are absolutely no different. I have a top five for everything.
I am not a geek.
You are such a geek.
Okay.
You're a large geek.
I'm more of a dork, actually.
No, I'm a geek.
He's a geek.
He's not smart enough to be a dork.
No. Nerds are smart.
Bite the heads off chickens. Oh. He's a geek.
Yes. Nerds are the smart ones.
Mm-hmm.
Dorks have no social skills whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
Geeks are the, you have a very narrow, you're a fan of something and yet you do have some social skills. It may not be a wide social standing.
Okay.
We're
geeks.
Okay, so the bottom line is we know about shit and we make lists. And that's why we're here tonight. We decided to compile for funsies.
Top five Martha Stewart episodes involving chainsaws?
Absolutely.
I could actually do that.
Yeah, it's a
good thing.
Wait,
she had one that involved chainsaws?
She has many.
Yes, the series finale of Martha Stewart living with the chainsaw.
American Psycho.
Funny we should mention that, because we have compiled our top five all-time series or season finales of television shows, and wait for it, more bang for your buck. Now how much would you pay? I apologize in advance, I'm sick, that's why I sound like this. We have also compiled our top five all-time movie soundtracks.
Needle drops.
Which, very exciting. So, where are we going to start? Somebody.
Soundtracks. Let's do soundtracks.
Soundtracks.
Okay, who shall I start?
Let's just throw them out willy-nilly.
Okay, now these are in no order, right?
No. Surprisingly, I have willy-nilly on mine. I don't
see, mine are mostly in no order, but my number one is definitely my number one.
Oh, go ahead. Well,
yeah, that's it.
So, should I start with my number one?
Yeah.
My number one, in my opinion, is not only the greatest movie soundtrack of all time, it is the blueprint for what I would consider to be an absolutely perfect album. And that is, of course, the soundtrack to Purple Rain.
Yes,
I completely forgot about that,
here's my thing about that, though, is while Purple Rain, the album, is great, and it's the soundtrack to the movie Purple Rain, I think, I'm not going to dispute, yes, number one soundtrack of all time, I just think some stuff is missing. Because you have Purple Rain, the album, that's Prince of Revolution, right?
Yes.
But if we're keeping it real, that should also have Jungle Love and The Bird by the Time. That should also have that Vanity 6 number on there, too, you know what I'm saying? And that stuff is missing from that album.
First of all, Vanity 6 was not in Purple Rain.
I'm sorry, Apollonia 6.
It's all right, same group, different lead singer.
Yeah.
But that was intentional, as you know, because The Bird and Jungle Love were on the Times album, and Apollonia 6 had their own album, and Purple Rain. So it was kind of, it was a way for Prince to get all three albums out, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But Purple Rain also mostly doubled as that Prince and the Revolution album.
I think for me, and I think the reason it didn't pop into my head, although it is, you know, a brilliant freaking album, is because I view the album more than I think of the movie, just because, I mean, the album is so amazing. I mean, I like the movie, but it's, you know, the movie. But
that was so generously put.
Yes.
That was a piece of shit movie.
No.
I'm the biggest Prince fan sitting at this table.
Wait. To quote the X-Files, Purple Rain.
Oh, great album, deeply flawed movie.
Yes. I'm not going to go as far as say it's shitty.
It's not shitty. But it is flawed, yes. But I view it, the album is so amazing.
Yes.
I almost don't even view it as the soundtrack to an album.
I don't either. But, you know, just to touch on the movie very briefly, yes, Apollonia's boobs were the business. Oh, I agree.
Her whole body. Apollonia is hot. Look, that movie came out in 84.
Oh, for the love of Pete.
She is fine to this day. Like, I look at her then, and she's still fine. Like, if you look at Ola Ray, who was in the Thriller video, and that was, like, 83 or something like that. You look at Ola Ray, now you're like, that was supposed to be fine? You look at Apollonia in that movie, you're like, God damn.
She was so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Prince could pick him, but here's the thing that a lot of people didn't know. I'm going to drop some knowledge on y'all.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that Apollonia's real name is Patricia Quintero, and that was her name when she auditioned for the movie. And when she was cast for the movie, because they originally were going to put Vanity in it, but she sucked. And she was starting to develop a lot of problems with drugs. Wait. And Prince was pretty much done with her at that point anyway.
Wait, she sucked as an acting?
Yes. Now, that should give you some idea. Considering wow. the performances in that movie, for the director to look at Vanity and be like, I'm sorry, you're the last straw of bad acting on this boat. You're the one we can't have. You know, yeah. So anyway, when she auditioned, her name was Patricia Quintero, and Prince met with her in her final callback, and he went up to her, as Prince is wont to do, and was just like, do you believe in God? And she was like, yes. And he goes, are you hungry? And she's like, yes. So they went and had lunch.
You want pancakes?
So they went and had lunch, and he named her Apollonia. And the studio wanted to kind of send this out as like a big publicity thing. So when the movie dropped, they would send, like, they didn't want anybody to know Apollonia's real name. She was everywhere with Prince in Minneapolis. They would go to movie theaters and sit and watch the movie in the back and sing along the whole time. And they were trying to make it like they were a couple. But what a lot of people didn't know was that Apollonia was not only a singer, she was not a singer. And anybody who heard the Apollonia 6 album can testify to that. She was just an actress, and she was also married at the time.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they didn't want anybody to know. So they didn't tell anybody that. Which I just thought was the coolest thing, but
her
yeah.
Her husband must have been hating life.
For me, the number one redeeming quality of that movie, aside from the soundtrack, was Morris Day.
And Jerome.
Yeah, just, yeah.
How's the Family?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very campy movie, but anyway.
How's the Family is like the coldest shit that's ever been said in a movie, ever.
That's like one of my favorite parts
of
the movie.
No, that's like, that's... Oh, my lord, that's worse than, like, Long Live the King and the Lion King. Just him, like, How's the Family?
Yeah.
Ah! It's just like...
Oh, I wish this was a video podcast. Y'all should have just seen that.
Every
anyway.
Time I see that, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, but just to clear some things up, no, Purple Rain is not the story of Prince's life. His mother is not mixed. She was black. You know, they weren't beating each other that much or anything like that.
Dad is not Link from the Mod Squad?
His dad is not Link from the Mod Squad or anything like that. Although, the little song that you hear him playing on the piano was actually written by John Nelson, who was Prince's father. About to put that out there.
Wait, okay. Are you saying that Jerome doesn't follow Morris Day around with a mirror?
I'm sure he may at this point.
Because
he just don't have much else to do. But Purple Rain, amazing album, 4 incredible B-sides, including my all-time favorite Prince song, 17 Days. Just saying. Let's talk about the others on my list. Okay.
We're just not going to go around?
All right. No, please, Joe, please.
One that... it was actually one of the first CDs I ever bought. Actually, this and Pearl Jam's 10 were the first two CDs I ever bought. And it was until the day my six-disc CD changer got stolen out of my car about 3 or 4 years ago. It was in my rotation. It was in that CD changer. Was the soundtrack to Wayne's World.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Like, there are times, okay. Like, I'll hear the end of... I don't remember the song that came after it, but I remember hearing Bohemian Rhapsody, and then I hear the almost expecting to hear like the guitar of the next song come on right afterwards because I listened to it so much. Just
So that's all right. So we're on that soundtrack. We're talking Bohemian Rhapsody,
Dreamweaver,
Foxy Lady. Tia Carrere's version of Ballroom Blitz and Fire.
I love her version of Ballroom Blitz.
I dig it. I like Sweets better, but I dig her version too.
I love that version. That's a
That she did a great cover, and I mean when I saw that movie. I hadn't heard Sweet's version, and I didn't know who the hell Tia Carrere was. I'm like, oh, did they get this? You know, because I was a stupid kid.
You know, it's actually, I feel stupid because I was before I had been properly introduced to Jimi Hendrix. And so when they do that cover of Fire, I had never heard that before in my life. And I was just like, hey, that's
cool
I knew
that,
song.
But that's because I listened to a lot of shit from the 60s.
Yeah.
So, it's shocking that, you know. That'll definitely show you why.
Original.
No, that's a decent
shit,
song. That's a
good one. Sadly, the shitty Beatles weren't on there.
They're shitty. So it's not just a clever name.
All right, Daddy, what do you got?
At the top of my list, I have the soundtrack to Pulp Fiction.
That's on my list, too.
That was top of mine.
I had Kill Bill Volume 1.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I again.
Tarantino
that,
puts together
yeah,
a great
but then
show.
I then,
he always has great
then right next to it, and it said other Tarantinos.
Yeah.
Because, really, I mean, almost anyone you can kind of just listen to, and it fits the movie perfectly, and it really fits his style.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just thought, I also thought it was a really good just standalone CD on its own, because I actually bought the soundtrack before I saw the movie. Uh-huh. And yeah, I just remember just listening to that. I just really did. And it was music that I'd never heard before either. Like,
so eclectic. Honestly,
yeah. And because something like Jungle Boogie, which is big now, before Pulp Fiction came out, people never really knew that Kool and the Gang song.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, and maybe some people were, well, okay, some older people knew Let's Stay Together by Al Green. People my age didn't know that song.
Right.
Or, dude, the Statler Brothers?
Yeah.
Nobody knew the Statler Brothers. The yeah.
My dad was a big fan of that song. So I knew that song, but I hadn't heard it in, like, forever.
Son of a Preacher Man.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, you had a lot of... Tarantino, for me, I should disclose, Pulp Fiction is my favorite movie of all time. And one of the reasons...
What?
Yeah. One of the reasons for that is because it was so of my time and of my era. That movie came out when I was, you know, graduating high school, and it just... It felt like it was a movie for me and for my era. And so that soundtrack introduced a lot of songs to people of that era who they probably had never heard before. Or if they had, it was sparingly, or it hadn't been for a while, and things like that. And, like it was like you said, it went perfectly with the movie, and I thought it was also good just music on its own.
Well, also, too, it had a lot of, like, the surfer guitar.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people had never really even gotten into.
It's Miserloo, such a bizarre mix.
Yeah, Dick Dale and the Deltones. Like, I had heard of them,
yeah.
only because I'm a dork, and I love this one movie called Back to the Beach. With an
I love that movie.
And Dick Dale does a cameo in that, and so I was familiar with.
Did we ever leave Ohio?
I was familiar with Dick Dale from that, but I never really heard anything from him. And then I hear this Miserloo, and I'm like, oh wow, he wasn't just some kind of kitschy icon. He was a guitar genius. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
so,
no, that was top on my list.
With Kill Bill Volume 1, because it was the one, actually the first Tarantino one that just popped into my head when we were coming up with it. But then I was like, oh, but Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Reservoir Dogs. And of the two Kill Bills, I like the first one better. I remember the song when Oren Ishii just comes around the corner, like the... Like, just that, it was...
That's good shit.
Yeah,
wasn't that one, didn't he collaborate with RZA on that one?
Yeah.
From Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah.
And that song was everywhere after the movie came out.
Yeah.
Well, that Tarantino has that effect.
And then, then I forget the, blanking on the song, but I remember Why Must I Be Misunderstood, the cover of it that went...
Already, Santa Esmeralda, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Yeah, like, I...
The extended version.
Yeah, because, like, there's the long build-up to it. Yeah, because I like that original song, but then I thought it was a great cover, and...
And also, right after that, the 6 7 8s got really big after that. Yeah. Their songs were being used in commercials that were from that movie.
Yeah.
That's, like I said, that's top of my list is that one.
What you got?
Well, this is probably not going to be very popular with you guys, but it's one where if I can stick it in and listen to the entire soundtrack, is the DeLovely soundtrack.
Oh, no, that's I love that soundtrack.
Which is all Cole Porter.
Cole Porter is awesome.
Yeah, no, and, I can see that.
But it's not the original Cole Porters, it's Alanis Morissette, it's Robbie Williams.
You love Vivian Greene's Love for Sale.
I love Vivian Greene's version of that. I love the Begin the Beginning with Sheryl Crow does on it. It's a beautiful soundtrack with all the Cole Porters.
It is a good soundtrack.
And seriously, I can put that in and listen to it from start to finish.
Elvis Costello's Let's Misbehave.
I love his version of that. Yeah, it's a great soundtrack.
No, I don't know.
Solid
stand
choice.
Behind that one.
I'm just saying, it's not like, you know, I love Pulp Fiction and Purple Rain were both right on top.
Actually, I far prefer that soundtrack to the movie.
Well, the movie was not what I would call the greatest of films, even though I love Kevin Kline dearly.
No, Kevin Kline's awesome, but
I think he's an amazing actor.
He's the good friend. Great.
But that soundtrack, there are times now where I'll just be like, you know, I want that in the car.
Yeah.
I want to listen to that in the car. And I can listen to the whole thing from start to finish with no issues. It's a beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah, I think so far the soundtracks we've mentioned so far are all really good for just listening to the whole thing.
Yeah,
you don't have to skip.
They stand on their own.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of unpopular choices, I think my next one is probably going to be an unpopular choice.
Here we go.
It's probably on your list, though, too, maybe. It is the soundtrack to Moulin Rouge.
No.
I forgot
about that. But I didn't. And when you said unpopular choice, you meant unpopular with Derwood.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I
hate that movie, and it's mostly because of the music.
Though, it's not just you. That's a very polarizing movie and soundtrack.
I love that soundtrack.
Because I've met people who absolutely love it. I've met people who absolutely hate it. But for me, I love it. Baz Luhrmann is such a genius.
Yes.
That's
except for Australia.
Yeah, well, except, we're gonna pretend that didn't happen. But Like, the first and the second soundtracks are just, I'm blown away by, and this was before mashups really became prevalent, too. This was 2001, where they were just kind of starting, and it just, I mean, the way these songs are crafted are so good.
Yep.
And the way they're done is just, and Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman both shine in the whole soundtrack, and I absolutely love everything about it.
Yeah,
no, unabashedly so.
Well, because like you said, it's the whole thing with the way he uses the music and the way he puts them together. The Elephant Love Medley,
yeah,
is so beautifully done, and it's probably about what 10 songs all mashed together, and it's so beautifully done and so perfectly put together. But I think that soundtrack is brilliant.
Well, because a lot of people were just, you know, I heard a lot of people tell me that, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit was the final straw when they got up and stormed out of the theater, and I was just like,
that's a shame.
And I was just like, you know what? And I know you know this, but it has been commonplace in musicals for about the last 80-some-odd years to take pre-existing songs, even sometimes popular songs, and put them into shows.
How dare they take popular songs and make movies Singing in the Rain?
Yeah, that was the whole reason that movie got made. I think we even talked about that on this podcast before.
Yeah.
You know, but that, Moulin Rouge, absolute love. Joe, what do you got?
My next one is probably something you might not expect from me, knowing, you know, my normal musical taste and all that, but...
Oh, now I'm excited.
The Big Chill.
That is a great soundtrack.
Not familiar.
It's all Motown. Yeah. It's actually put out by Motown, because in the movie, basically, it's a bunch of older of people in the probably in their 30s or so. I say older because when I first, you know, saw it, I was, you know, a kid because it was my mom's favorite movie. And then, you know, it's like, oh, all these older people, but then, you know, they're like, you know, 30s. I mean, Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
And but they're
Glenn Close is
Glenn Close said that too, right?
Yep.
Kevin Costner's arm. basically, you know, they're brought back to, you know, because of a friend's suicide. And
jeez, Joe, spoiler.
That's like the premise of the movie. like if he committed suicide at the end, but you know, and so and you know, because it was 82, I believe, maybe 83.
Yeah.
You know, so it's these people, you know, that grew up in the 60s.
Right.
So when, you know, you got Whiter Shade of Pale.
Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
Ain't Too Proud to Beg. Heard It Through the Grapevine.
It's great songs.
And just a whole bunch of great Motown songs. And, I mean, the one song that, as a kid, that I really knew going into it, but was not on the soundtrack, but that was just because it was You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Stones. But that was the one, because I knew mostly rock and roll at that point when I saw it, so.
That's an excellent
choice. I can put that soundtrack in, and it's, you know, a wide range of different Motown songs, you know.
What do you got, Daddy?
I got the soundtrack to Swingers.
I'm trying to remember what's on that soundtrack.
That's Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
That's where Big Bad Voodoo Daddy was showcased with a couple different songs on that one. You have some Bobby Darin on there. You have Dean Martin on there. You have a song that I can't believe I haven't heard since by a group called Love Jones, called Pay for Lovin'. That I think is one of the most beautiful songs.
Oh, ever. Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah. And I think that soundtrack, I mean, I was big into that neo-swing era when it came around. Still am into that. I mean, Reggie Swing is my Twitter name.
Well, I'll tell you, another one that came in around, would be on my top five, but it does have that same kind of vibe to it, is the soundtrack from The Mask. Jim Carrey's movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was
just
on TV.
That was very swingy.
Yeah, that had some good, decent swing to it.
I was more of a fan of just the mixture of the old school and the new school stuff going on Swingers, and plus I also really, really liked that movie.
You know, I probably liked the soundtrack better than I liked the movie. Maybe I need to take another look at it. I saw that movie in 98, and I was not feeling it at all.
I'm sorry you feel that way. That movie damn near changed my life. I shouldn't say damn near changed my life. That movie changed my life. So, yeah, it was a big inspiration to me, and that soundtrack is something I can...
You know, make sure he never carpools anywhere with anyone.
Don't buy
he leaves about 40 messages on...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, again, it's another one of those CDs I can just put in and just listen to all the way through, and that's a good evening.
Sweet.
It's a good CD to have sex to.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Lord.
What do you got?
We have experience. I mean, what?
mine, kind of in the same as Moulin Rouge, where it's mostly covers, is the soundtrack to Across the Universe.
Once he said Moulin Rouge, I'm like, I bet you put...
I love the covers.
Another heavy sigh from Derwin.
Yep.
I love the covers from Across the Universe. I think some of those are so brilliant.
I'm with you on that one.
The version of I Wanna Hold Your Hand is so gorgeous.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and take my sigh back, only because I think... I think the fact that I hated that movie so much is clouding my judgment on the soundtrack. And so if I
like me with Swingers.
Yeah. If I look at it objectively,
look,
it's a bunch
of Joe Cocker's cover of Come Together
amazing.
Was awesome.
Yeah. And I do have to say one thing, because I mean I'm a huge, huge, huge Beatles fan, and I think it's a testament to how well written those songs are and how is they're probably the most covered and most covered well. Like, I mean, hell, Joe Cocker made a career out of covering.
Your favorite song is covered in that movie.
Happiness
is a Warm Gun.
Yeah. That's a great cover.
Selma Hayek representing the vocal.
But the chick, I don't know her name, the chick that does the cover of Helter Skelter.
Dita Fuchs.
God, that's an amazing cover of Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
And then another movie, it's not one of my top, but it was a soundtrack I really liked. I mean, the movie was, you know, looking back, I was like, was the soundtrack to I Am Sam, which was all
Beatles covers.
All Beatles covers.
Well, you get the Rufus Wainwright cover of Across the Universe in that one, which is so beautiful.
But, I mean, that's a lot of time. And, I mean, the Beatles have so many... have been covered so well. I mean, I wouldn't say any of them are better than the original.
No.
But they're good covers and...
But that soundtrack for Across the Universe, that's another one I can just throw in and I can listen to that whole soundtrack.
Nice. Okay, well, for my next one, and I forgive me because I'm about to date myself like crazy here. I'm 35 years old, and the soundtrack of my formative years, my mother was still in her 20s when I was born, and she loved dance music. She loved club music, which at the time, Lord help me, was disco. So for me, it's one of the most successful soundtracks of all time, but it's also one of my favorites, Saturday Night Fever. I mean, it... And, like, seriously, it's kitschy, it's corny, but look at the album now, and it's, like, a greatest hits of that era.
That was Bee Gees at their best, honestly. And it was, dude, for that, number one, it's a great soundtrack for that movie. It's a great soundtrack for that time and for that era. And it's like a time capsule.
Yeah.
And it's a well-made one, actually. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's not like they took a bunch of disco dreck and just threw it in there. I mean, they had the Bee Gees come in and make some really good music.
It was pretty epic for its time.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I think
you need to apologize for that one.
I think it's good songs. That, like, for me personally, I have that attachment to it because it takes me back to when I was really little and my mom would turn on that music and dance in the living room all night. But
I'd pay money to see your mom dance into disco music.
Oh my God, can you not be gross for like 2 seconds?
Dude, I'm just saying. Look, is it
Derwin,
gross
stop,
to imagine...
stop licking your nipples.
Is it gross for me to imagine your mom in hot pants?
I don't know. Would it be weird for me to go to Virginia and dry hump your mom's gray Stone?
Okay, I think yes, actually. You can see why there's a bit of difference there, right?
Just barely. But anyway, Saturday
drive up and hump his dad.
I'll do that too.
Hey, my dad can be quite sexy sometimes.
I know you come by it honestly. I know your parents were fine. It's cool.
I do know this. If you want to go out for a good dinner at good rates, you go with
Derwin Senior is got you covered. Black Angus is in the house.
He will take you with a coupon and get you a good meal at a value price. It's
just true. As long as you order something of equal or lesser value.
Okay, Joe.
This next one's probably. Definitely something more typical of what I would do is one of my favorite movies, Almost Famous.
Cameron Crowe is another one who puts together a hell of a soundtrack.
He has some great soundtrack. He went I went to the same high school as him, many years apart, and his actual high school, not the one he went undercover for Fast Times. And actually part of it was filmed at my high school, because I remember watching with a couple of my friends, and the scene where he's in school and then walking, and I'm like, oh my God, you see lunch right there.
Yeah, a lot of extras in that movie. Yeah. The entire first season cast of The House is in that movie.
Yep.
Except me. But that's another story for another time.
But yeah, no, I mean, just a lot of, you know, late 60s,
and obscure,
early 70s.
Like, Field Flows by the Beach Boys.
Yeah, and, you know, and then also with the Stillwater songs that were made, and it doesn't help that, which Hart sister
I believe he's married to Ann Wilson.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, and I think she helped a lot with the music. Yeah. So it doesn't really hurt that you're married to a member of Heart.
Yeah.
Well, the great scene in that movie where Zooey Deschanel leaves her brother, Patrick Fugit, the albums. Apparently Cameron Crowe got each one of the younger cast members of that movie a stack of those CDs.
Nice.
Of all of those albums. Nice. And I remember Frances McDormand was in an interview and she's like, fuck them, where's mine?
Yeah. And I think one thing I think what really lends that movie is because that is such a personal movie to him, because it basically, that was him.
Yeah.
Like, he toured around with those bands, and one of my favorite, it's on the Untitled cut. They released the extended edition that was basically an extra, like, half an hour. But there was still one scene that they could not put in the movie, because even though Cameron Crowe was buddy-buddy with Page and Plant from Zeppelin, he could not get the rights to Stairway. Oh, like, they will not give out the rights to Stairway for anything. But there's this deleted scene where Patrick Fugit's going to his mom saying, music is poetry. And, you know, and basically what it, and it says, all right, well, here, listen to this. And on the DVD, it kind of, you know, freezes and says, all right, you know, you have to have a CD or a record or something with Stairway. And it says, all right, and does a countdown. It says, push play. And it does 5, 4, 3, 2, you push play and then... You know, you're listening to Stairway,
did
and then
you do this?
Yes, I did this, awesome. and it fits up perfectly because there's a part where you know there's a drum solo and one of the guys that's with him just starts playing the air drums and they're just sitting around and the fact that wasn't in the movie, but I think it was actually you know really was important to the movie, but sadly he couldn't put it in.
Yeah, remember when Kate Hudson was awesome? For like those 5 minutes.
I'm trying to think back and I'm not recalling.
She was pretty
awesome. Almost she was famous. So good in that movie.
Almost famous. She's so brilliant.
And now all she does is make rom coms.
With Owen Wilson.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Or Matthew McConaughey.
All right, Daddy, what's your next one?
I have the soundtrack to Boomerang. Boomerang, Eddie Murphy.
No, I know the movie. I'm trying to remember the soundtrack.
I remember that There's as the life. Very first appearance of Tony Braxton.
Yes. We have that. We also have Die Without You by P.M. Dawn.
Oh, and End of the Road. Wow.
And End of the Road by Boyz II Men. Yeah. Yes, the greatest R&B song of all time.
It just all comes back to Boyz II Men to you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Is there a problem with that, Amy?
That's a great song, though. But, that is a good soundtrack.
Yeah, that's... it's.
I couldn't remember
it's
the underrated. Soundtrack. I know the movie.
Did Babyface produce that whole soundtrack?
Yeah, that was L.A. and Babyface. And TLC has a cameo somewhere on the soundtrack when they were first starting out. So it's a lot of R&B. A little bit of hip-hop, mostly R&B. But yeah, another good, smooth one.
I never saw that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's actually one of Eddie Murphy's better ones. Are you about
Grace
to say...
Grace Jones is so...
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I got my Boomerang mixed up with...
No, that was Grace Jones, but you saw Boomerang?
I saw it in the theater!
And again, in Alabama.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? What's his phrase from In Living Color?
David Alan Grier.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And
Halle Berry's in that.
In Living Color.
Robin Givens. Oh,
Grace Jones, Eartha Kitt.
Eartha
Kitt's hilarious.
That's a great ensemble cast. You've never seen Boomerang?
No.
Anthony?
See, you don't give me nearly enough credit.
No, you're right. I got to start eating my words.
But no, that's a good soundtrack. Good choice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What do you got?
Your disco. I also have kind of a disco era soundtrack on mine. Mine was Boogie Nights.
P.T. Anderson, another person that
puts together good soundtracks. Boogie Nights.
That soundtrack to There Will Be Blood. Oh my god!
I don't want to put P.T. Anderson in the same conversation as Tarantino when it comes to soundtracks because Boogie Nights is a good soundtrack.
It's Tarantino soundtrack.
Magnolia.
Okay.
So I'm just saying.
The Boogie Nights soundtrack.
No, the Boogie Nights soundtrack is dope. That's all that.
Not only is it good music, but there are times where I can hear that music and the scene will so pop into my head.
Yeah. Sister Christian.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
That was the most nerve-wracking scene. I was there opening night watching that movie and just that, you know.
With those snaps.
Just this kid in the back doing the snaps while he's holding a gun and just like.
And how creepy was Alfred Molina in that scene?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
There it is, undies, and you're just
And that was also Thomas Jane was the guy. John C. Reilly and.
John C. Reilly was genius.
First of all, Boogie Nights is a magnificent masterpiece of a movie.
Yes. But like, I think the music is genius, and it's so perfect of the time. It's the end of it, though, where they do the Beach Boys song.
God Only Knows.
God Only Knows. I think the ending of that movie is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And that music is so perfectly in tune with that scene. I love...
You got time. Yeah. Okay. I've got...
No one mentioned Rockstar?
I've got a really dated choice.
But wait, not Saturday Night Fever?
No. Along those lines. But this is something that... It's a soundtrack, and it's a little off-kilter for me, but I remember working at my first theater in Florida, and my boss, Barbara, had this CD, and she played it constantly, and it was really, really good. The soundtrack to Empire Records.
Okay, I'm not even... I can't even get past how shitty that movie was, so I can't even hear the soundtrack right now.
It's a good... It's very of its time.
It's very... What is that, early 90s?
Like maybe, 94, 93. 95, 95. Something like that. But it was... It's a good soundtrack. It's not a lot of, like, notable singles. Maybe Edwin Collins' Girl Like You is probably the number one thing that's most recognizable. Okay, yeah. But it's a good straight-through listen. And it's one of those things where it takes me anyway, back to a very specific time and place. So it's a good soundtrack for me to just kind of pop in and listen to all the way through.
I just can't get past how much I hate that movie.
You're kind of a traitor to your whole generation for that. You know that, right?
Actually, I'm not. And I'll tell you why. Because I think, honestly, we were still at that point where there was a great schism in our culture at that point. Where I can honestly say Empire Records, that was some white people shit right there.
I can see that.
I watched that movie. There was not one character I liked.
His name's Warren.
Yeah. The whole time I'm rooting for this record store to go under, just because I think these people really need to learn a lesson.
Oh my gosh.
They are all fuck ups, and they have no redeeming value whatsoever.
Okay.
Every single one of them. I'm like, why am I supposed to care about any one of you people?
Because they're white.
I guess. But yeah, seriously, I hated that movie. I honestly go back and forth about what movie I hate the most, and it's either Empire Records or Moulin Rouge, and I can't tell which one I hate the most.
See, I'm not gonna jump up on a box and defend Empire Records, because like I said, it's very of its time. It's a fun little movie. It's got a cult following. I love Moulin Rouge, but once again, we talk about the polarizing effect.
I realize I'm in the minority about Moulin Rouge, and it just wasn't for me, and whatever would happen.
And I'm gonna say this right now about Empire Records. It was on the other day, and I was watching part of it. Is it just me, or has Renee Zellweger had some work done since that movie?
Oh, she's a quilt.
Seriously.
Yeah.
She doesn't even look the same.
No, totally different.
Whereas Liv Tyler, she seems to hold up well.
Well, yes, but, you know, she's not as cool as Mia Tyler.
Very true. Mia Tyler, if you're listening.
I just want to see how many podcasts I can get you to mention her and talk to her.
Mia Tyler, you have a fan sitting right here. Whatever you
and
do.
And standing at the same time, whatever if you know do. What I mean.
I support whatever it is that you do.
Erection.
All right, Joe, what do you got?
And actually, this is my last one because we already went over Kill Bill. Mm. And I had to put one musical, and I had to... I didn't think it would be fair to do a musical that was all, you know, was a stage show than a musical movie.
That was hard for
like,
me.
I'm just like... Because it was the same thing. It's like, well, it's already... Broadway cast album, and then the movie is the same thing, it's different people singing it, but you know, of course I put, you know, things with covers, but I have to say South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
That's a great soundtrack.
Yeah. What's sad is, I mean, you have to find other ways of getting it, but the one song that's in that movie that is not on the actual soundtrack that you would buy,
you're going to hell,
little boy, you're going to hell. Yeah. By DVDA, which is, you know, Trey Parker.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I love that that was the name of the fake band that he created. And if you've seen Orgasmo.
Yeah.
You know the significance.
Yes.
The genius of that soundtrack is Michael McDonald.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
The song that plays over the credits, Through the Eyes of the Child. That is a genius song. The fact that he got Michael McDonald to sing that song is just... Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean... What would Brian Boitano do?
Yeah.
I mean, it is such a great classical musical.
The thing that's so funny about that song is that Brian Boitano has a show that's on the Food Network. It's called What Would Brian Boitano Eat? Which is so funny.
Cook.
He's so hilarious on it, and he uses that song as the title of the theme song.
I have to go watch
it. It's brilliant. But the Michael McDonald singing that song.
It's like, dude, who are you? I'm Brian Denny. No, not fucking Brian Denny. He's Brian
Boyzano.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah, that song to me is the genius of that whole soundtrack. It's the fact that he got Michael McDonald to sing that
song.
And
just, I mean, it's so much of the movie is in each of the songs and all that. Yeah. But
again,
the La Resistance lives on. Just Les Mis is one of my favorite musicals of all time. It was the first one I ever saw live. And just seeing that scene and just like, especially when they do the cross fades and the side looks on like the concert video is...
The flags.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is
see, just like your love of Mia, what's her face? My love of Trey Parker.
Tyler.
Yeah.
Mia...
Well, my love of Trey Parker knows no bounds. He even above Bradley Cooper and his beautiful smile. Trey Parker, yes.
All right, do we have any more on our lists?
I got one more. Austin Powers, Spy Who Shagged Me. The second Austin Powers movie.
Yeah. I support this because Beautiful Stranger by Madonna is on it.
Actually, I really, really, really like that song. We also have a cover of...
Sucks that it couldn't be nominated for Best Original Song for an Academy Award because it sampled the bass line from Ray of Light.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's a shame.
Has to be an original song.
Oh.
Yeah, and written for that medium.
Yeah.
Right.
Why Come What May from Moulin Rouge was not eligible because it was originally written for... William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but there's, again, another one of those CDs I can just put on and listen to the whole time. Also has some clips from the movie that I really, really like. I believe that one does also have Let's Get It On by Marvin Gaye. You can never go wrong with that.
Although that movie does not hold up.
I disagree with that. Yeah.
I thought...
Goldmember, I think, is what kills everything.
Oh.
But I think Spy Who Shagged Me, I think if you go back and watch
I still enjoy it. I just rewatched it a couple years ago, and it's not... At the time when the movie came out, I thought it was hilarious. I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies at that time. And in my back of my head, I always remembered how funny it was. I think because of Goldmember and Love Guru, and then just the phenomenon that was, you know, Austin Powers, you couldn't escape it.
Every frat boy douchebag going, behave.
And yeah, baby. You know, like all that, I think, led to just an overkill of the character. That made, in retrospect, it just seem tired, whereas it wasn't. So it wasn't necessarily the writing in the movie, it's just the gag and the bit got tired after it, which retroactively made it not...
One of my problems was the choice of the leading ladies, because him and Elizabeth Hurley, they had chemistry.
Yeah.
The second one, him and Heather Graham totally had chemistry.
Yeah.
Him and Beyonce had none.
I maintain to my dying breath.
I agree with this man.
That role should have gone to Aisha Tyler.
You're absolutely right.
That movie
would have
been hella better.
That would have been great.
If it had been Aisha Tyler.
Yeah, the only redeeming value, I think, of that one was Michael Caine.
Yes.
Oh, well, he was hilarious.
Yes, but him and Beyonce?
Yeah.
They had none. There was no chemistry
Beyonce
there.
Shouldn't be acting.
Ugh.
She was okay in Dreamgirls, but she really shouldn't be acting. She should barely be singing shit.
Yeah.
Stick to dancing and wearing your mama's clothes, girl.
I've got one last one, and it's more of a personal thing because I love Madonna, and that would be the soundtrack to Dick Tracy.
I was going to ask if that actually qualifies because because I know she had that album I'm Breathless.
Yeah.
Well, that's
is that actually the soundtrack to Dick Tracy?
It is the sound. It's inspired by Dick Tracy, and some of the songs are in the movie because Sooner or Later was nominated for the Academy Award from it.
All right.
Here's my official ruling as the rank and file Madonna fan here.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm a bigger Madonna fan than you are.
There's no effing way.
We can argue about this
later. I'll give you Prince, but you don't get Madonna.
Ladies, you're both pretty.
Anyway.
There was that time I did see her riding around the floor in a wedding dress, actually. Have you ever done that?
Hello?
Yes, actually.
I looked like her for several years, thank you very much.
Yeah, me too. But anyway, I'm Breathless is actually not the soundtrack to Dick Tracy. However, it's definitely a companion piece to the movie, so I think it should be admissible.
Of course, it's because
fair
the song
enough.
Was
then
nominated.
That, okay, then that,
all right,
then that goes on my list too, because I was thinking about that one. I just didn't think
it
was actually because I number one. I love the movie Dick Tracy. Love the movie Dick Tracy.
I'm surprised by that.
Why?
I just am.
Dude, I was obsessed with Dick Tracy when that movie came out.
It was the colorful suits, wasn't it?
It was the combination of all that. The colorful suits, the period. The way they talked, all the different villains and whatnot, just everything. I was obsessed with all that. I wanted that yellow fedora and trench coat. Oh, how bad. the empty watch he wore, and he would talk to the chief. I'm on my way. Oh my lord, I wanted to be Dick Tracy so badly. I was obsessed. Like I remember, I used to collect Archie comics, and I know I probably shouldn't admit that out loud, but anyway.
I didn't too.
It's too late. It's out there now.
Yeah. Well. I remember there was one Archie comic I had, the back cover on the inside was an ad for the movie. It was coming out, and it was just a circle panel comic strip of Dick Tracy talking on his little watch communicator thing, and it said, "I'm on my way." And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I held on to that comic book for years just because of that. I eventually lost it, but yeah, I love, effing love that movie. The music's a big part of that. Patinkin representing on that duet with Madonna is really great.
What Could You Lose?
Yeah. There was just so much about that movie.
Sooner or Later, More. There's some great music on
Madonna's there. Dresses were dope.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say something, but I'm not gonna now. So okay. Not, no, too late.
But what anyway. All right, so that's our soundtracks.
Yeah,
I think we have good taste.
Can we make a top five out of everything we just picked?
I don't think we'd be able to.
No, I think they're all too good. Here's our top 20.
Consensus, though, I think we can all agree on
Pulp Fiction,
and Purple Rain.
Yeah,
Purple Rain.
That was a bad day.
Then it gets brutal.
Yeah.
we're gonna end up in a fist fight if we try and make that a top five.
I think we all agree that Quentin Tarantino puts together good soundtracks. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
All right. So now,
we're talking about Beatles covers, you know, one it did get said, but we should just put it in our top five is soundtrack to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, by the Bee Gees.
Oh wow!
I am kidding.
Oh wow!
Well, seriously. It's kind of funny.
Oh, wow. Although I do have to say, Aerosmith's cover of
Come Together.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope. Well, actually,
kind of that's the only good thing that came out.
When
of
you
that
were
movie.
Talking about how you didn't want to pick a Broadway that had gone to, become a movie.
Yeah.
Because my right off the top of my head, when I think soundtracks, is Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh,
yeah. I thought about Hedwig, but I decided
but
to
because
go
it was a Broadway
instead.
Yeah.
First.
Although
I think it counts, though.
Although my favorite song is not in the movie, and that's Random Number Generation.
Mm.
That's like my favorite song.
Yeah, that soundtrack is so good.
That was a movie I saw, and that movie again is another one.
Made
of those
you question
kinda,
your feelings?
No. I watched that movie. I had to go home and think about some things having to do with myself. You know what I'm saying? Like that movie made me introspective. I was just like, wow, I have to assess things. I've got to take some time.
Wow.
And I could have got laid that night, but I was like, no, I gotta think some shit over, actually.
You didn't want to accidentally be thinking of Tommy Gnosis while...
It wasn't anything like that. I'm just saying, look, it's a long story. Anyway, the music in that movie was definitely very
you wouldn't want
to
be getting it on
me.
And her say, love the front of me, honey. And
oh
then,
my gosh.
Look.
But yeah, no, that one to me is brilliant. I think Hedwig and the English.
We had to ban that movie and soundtrack in my house for a while just because everyone was always singing it at the top of their lungs
so
and
good.
You couldn't hear the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, no, this is not allowed at parties in our house anymore because y'all suck.
How can you not love Wig in a Box? It's.
All right. So moving on to our next top five.
Which we're probably going to have to do probably pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top five seasons or series finales. In no order. Now, I'm going to start off with my first one, because talk about polarizing. But I thought this was absolute genius, and it was the final episode of The Sopranos.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was absolutely, positively brilliant.
I liked it. I didn't really watch the show, but then I
neither did I.
And I thought just what he was doing, I really did like what he did. I mean... I can understand if you followed the show and it might not be what you wanted, how you would not like it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
But I loved it because they left it so open-ended, people will be talking about that forever.
Yes.
Forever!
I thought it was a cool idea that they made it as if it wasn't the end. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just a family that's gonna keep on living their life, no matter what. And I like the idea that it's, they didn't. While they were ending a TV show, they were letting you know this family doesn't die or anything.
Well,
they
see, for me, my personal theory is I thought it was from Tony's perspective, and I thought the blackout was him getting killed. Hmm. I thought the guy
that
who went into the bathroom killed him.
Oh,
I thought he got
that
whacked.
That is a very popular.
That was, and to me, it made perfect sense considering the kind of life that he led, and that's. But like I said, it was so open-ended. It was so awesome.
Yeah, and I think there are some finales that, like with that one specifically, that get talked about, and it's described as polarizing. People loved it or hated it.
Yeah.
And it's better to do that than go the route of, say, oh, I mean, a show that a finale I know that like almost no one I know likes and I've never heard, is Seinfeld, where
so blah.
Yeah, and it was one of the, and it's known as it just.
See, I hated that whole series.
Yeah,
so.
I hated Seinfeld.
Well, I liked the show.
I mean, I wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't like, oh my god, Seinfeld. But I still was there.
I just think what they did with that finale. I mean, I think it was cool. Props to them for giving us the parade of all their, because the show was based on a lot of their periphery characters and one-off characters, things like that. And they gave us a big old parade of all those, and that's cool. You know, it's a remembrance of the series.
The premise was there, but it was not just the executed.
Way they ended it the way that the show kind of, or what the concept was supposed to be. You know, it's the show about nothing, and they kind of just let the ending just kind of sit there. And I think everybody was looking for this grand kind of just send off, and it definitely was not that.
Hmm. What you got, Derwin?
Wait, no, that wasn't mine though.
Oh,
I'm next. I was just saying.
You're just throwing that out for no.
Well, I was saying how. No, I was saying I was comparing how it. You know, the polarizing. It'd be better known to be polarizing finale as opposed to everyone just going. That
please
it sucked.
Please forgive us. Yes. Go ahead, Joe.
It's not a series finale. It's a season finale from a show that did have a very polarizing series finale, but. In my eyes, the season 3 finale of Lost, the one where it took it from, I mean, it changed the show. It was right after they decided to end it and, you know, where it went, the end date. And you're sitting there and watching, and then, and I don't care, spoilage, whatever, you know, at this point, if you don't know, fuck you. And it turns out, it's a flash forward. It was the first flash forward that we now realize, oh shit, people get off the island.
Right.
How does this happen? And it changed the entire dynamic of the show.
Well, because at that point, I remember that, because it was like, oh my god, this is in the future. It took a show that you were relying on this whole basis of them doing these flashbacks, where they totally screwed you over into thinking it was a flashback, and then it was like, okay, now everything's up for grabs.
And then you had to go back and rewatch it, and then you're like, oh my god, I can't believe it.
No,
and then,
nothing is for sure.
And then from then on out, it was safe. Like...
You couldn't trust the show.
You couldn't.
You're like, you had to wait and figure, is this a forward or is this a flashback? And I think, because at that point, the show had kind of been stagnating just because they were going on, but they knew they had to get to their end. And so they couldn't reveal some, they couldn't do that until they had the end date. And then once they got that, so I think that really pushed it forward. I mean, although I do have to say that show had some of the best finales of...
Oh, yeah, they did.
The what-the-fuck sort of finale that you're like, wait, you're not coming back till January? I hate you.
mine is, I'm not sure, it's not a series finale, it's a season finale. I'm not sure which season, but it's the granddaddy of them all, and it's the reason why season finales are a big deal now. And it's Dallas, and JR gets shot... I remember watching that as a kid and not knowing as much about TV as I do now. And just knowing that, you know, every week another episode comes. And then sometime during the summer when I'm out of school, it's all reruns.
Right.
And I just seen that episode where somebody shoots JR. And I'm watching it with my mom, as I always did. And I'm like, Mom, wait, who shot him? She's like, I don't know. And I'm just like, all right, I guess we'll just have to watch next week to find out who shot him. I tune in next week and it's a rerun. I tune in after the week after that and it's another rerun.
This is why Derwin's bitter now.
No, I'm just saying that it was the first cliffhanger that we had at the end of a season. I remember just watching every week just hoping it wasn't another rerun so I could find out who the F shot JR. And then finally, when the season premiere came for the next season, we found out it was Swellen's little sister. It was a big deal.
I do have to put, though.
Seriously?
I do have to put, it's on my list.
Yeah.
I had... Who shot Mr. Burns?
Okay, yeah.
Because it gripped the world the same way that did.
Exactly.
Even though it was a direct homage to it. Yeah. And, like, they had contests and all that. And it was just one of those things where it was like, back when, I mean, I still love The Simpsons. I still think it's a good show. During...
It's absolute heyday.
The brilliance that it was. Yeah, where it could not be touched for creativeness.
But you wouldn't have had that without the...
Well, exactly.
Who shot JR.
Right. No,
and
yeah, was, no,
it's
I
the
think
predecessor
that's...
for all of them. And now it's like, it's why TV schedules are made the way they are now, pretty much.
If you say finale to me, the first one that pops into my head is Twin Peaks.
Oh, well, yeah.
The series finale, which... Because it got canceled, was the Twin Peaks, where, I don't know...
Almost every single character dies.
And then your main character, Kyle MacLachlan, is now evil. And it was,
So, okay, because I wasn't as familiar. The only episode I ever saw was when they showed who killed Laura Palmer, and I'm really still not sure who that was. So the series finale was not the who killed Laura Palmer episode.
No, because you find that out like
pretty soon. Yeah.
About,
tell you in the third episode.
Yeah,
but you don't figure it out until later.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the beginning of the second season. You don't really know, and because at least I don't think anyone would have really gone on to the second season.
To me, Twin Peaks changed television. Yeah. It changed the way I looked at television.
Why so?
Because it was so... It took television to another level. It took it to...
It was like cinema.
It was an art level.
It was Lynch.
Fucking
with you. And
Lost would have never come along.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks was a show... It was the first time you had to pay attention. Like, you had to watch every single detail of that show, or you were screwed. There was no way around it.
All right.
Got you.
Another favorite finale of mine, personally, is Mystery Science Theater 3000. For the last 10 minutes of the very last episode. Because it was, you know, a guy in space and his robots watching awful movies. In the last episode, the last 10 minutes of that episode, Mike gets back to Earth with Tom and Crow, and they flash forward to Mike in his apartment with Tom Servo and Crow T Robot on the couch, and they sit down together because a movie's on TV, and the movie they're watching is The Crawling Eye, which was the very first movie they ever did on MST3K. And I thought that was adorable.
I love that. That's pretty sweet.
What do you got, Joe?
My next one, the last one that's not a series finale on my list, but I'm a big fan of both versions of the show, British and US, but the second season finale of The Office.
Which one's that?
That's the one where Jim finally tells Pam.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because it was one of those, like, it was in its most awkward, painful humor moments where, like, I remember sitting watching it and... You know, he was debating telling her, you know, and that he was going to apply for a transfer. And, you know, he gets to the point where you think, oh, he's going to say, I'm transferring. But then he's like, I love you. And you're like, I was just saying, fuck. Like, what? Fuck. No. And then she comes in. And, yeah, it was one of those. And then it ended. It was just like this awkward, painful, like, shit. I now have to wait. And it had about another... season and a half, two seasons of that really awkward, painful. Then it got into more. I still like it, but it wasn't that painful, awkward humor that it had until the wedding episode. And then,
but I think what they've done is I think they've rewarded a lot of their hardcore viewers with now you'll notice everything kind of has a happy ending. Like the way they structure the show, it has everything leading to that the normal construct of a sitcom where you're going to have something awkward happen or you're going to now he's doomed.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they steer themselves out.
Yeah,
and they avoid the mountain, you know, and it's like you're finding a lot of times now that things are actually ending, like with Michael Scott leaving, and
which
all.
I thought that
the way they did that was amazing, but that was all set up to be a disaster.
Yeah,
but it turns out this is actually
my favorite line from that episode is where as he's about to take off the microphone because he's boarding a plane to move away. And he's taking out the microphone, he just looks at the camera and is like, you guys will tell me when this is going to air, right? Because it's a documentary crew following him around, but it's, you know, it's been 7 years that they've been filming that we've all just kind of forgotten that's the premise of the show.
Yeah.
So, but then just saying, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that it's gone on that long. They kind of acknowledge that. And
what you got?
Yeah, I really don't have anything else, honestly.
Oh,
I can't really think of season finales that I guess because I like TV so much I hate when it ends.
Me too. My love of Trey Parker knows no bounds. The season finale where we're trying to find out who's Cartman's dad.
Oh my god.
Oh, yeah.
Although the only thing better is the season premiere
the
next year.
Where they pulled
that was the first season finale.
It was on April Fool's Day and they pulled that Terrence and Phillip episode. And
apparently people were pissed.
Comedy Central got killed with phone calls.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I remember watching that show, the second episode, because I had just started college and a bunch of my friends were. One of my friends went, you have to watch the show. And then I remember going and so many people being upset. And I thought it was hilarious.
I thought it was genius. But then I think Trey Parker is genius.
I didn't see that. I didn't see that Terrence and Phillip episode, but I heard about it. And when I heard about it, I was like, that is hilarious.
Well, because they ended it with, you know, who's Cartman's father?
Yeah.
Is it Doug?
And in 1989, Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I love the
fact find this out next week.
Yeah.
Next is on... No.
Next season on South Park.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch!
I love the fact that, because to me, that's the epitome of people making TV to make themselves laugh. Yeah. They're not trying to pander to an audience.
Who would do that?
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, you know what? We think this is going to be hilarious, so this is what we're going to do, yep. as opposed to, hey, I wonder what these people want or think, you know?
Okay, my next one, it's not one that you hear get mentioned very often in series finales. It was one of the best sitcoms, in my estimation, on television.
I know where
in its heyday, and then it became probably the worst.
Oh.
And then the ending, for me, completely brought it back in and forgave that last god-awful season, and that was the series finale of Roseanne.
Yeah.
I'm gonna respectfully disagree with you.
Let me plead the case. Because, obviously, the last season of that show was ridiculous. They win the lottery, this, that, and the other, and it just became more and more, it was stupid. Yeah. It just lost all its edge. You could tell nobody cared anymore.
Yeah.
Roseanne herself had a big hand in writing that finale. And I thought that it was really good that she came back in to clean up the mess she had made and left it in a good place. But she, you know, they explained it away, maybe a little simply, maybe a little oversimplified, but I just love the fact that it was kind of, it's kind of like you have a kid and you raise them, and then when they're a teenager, you beat them constantly, but then you kiss them on the forehead, just to let them know you love them. That, to me, was how Roseanne ended.
And for me,
it was that kiss on the forehead.
Yeah, but that kiss on the forehead was not enough to forgive all the beatings that it took for that last season, seriously. Because that it was a show that totally betrayed its Bible, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, that show was all about this blue-collar family and how they're getting along and struggling. They were so real, and we identified with them.
Yeah.
And then they win the lottery.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? If it could have been like, I would have forgave them if maybe Dan or one of the kids has an idea that they get a patent on this amazing invention, and that's how they come up, and you want to go that way. Okay, cool. But winning the damn lottery, it betrayed everything that the show stood for.
And I agree with everything you're saying. But for me, I thought that finale, the fact that they went in to explain all of that.
Yeah.
It's like, by the way, this last season, it didn't really happen.
Yeah, I mean, they handled it in a really good way. It was a good episode, but the last one.
The last shot of her sitting back down on that same raggedy couch.
Yep.
The Afghan behind her.
Yeah.
To me, it's the equivalent of when Eminem on his last album talked about how the album before sucked. It's like, okay, I'm glad you acknowledged it. It doesn't change the fact that last album did suck.
Yeah.
I have three kind of left. One, the granddaddy for me of all finales.
It was on my list, and I didn't even say it because I know it was on yours.
Is Newhart.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like,
amazing.
I mean, just this,
it's the greatest.
Yeah, just waking up on the Bob Newhart show and
that fandom orgasm.
Like, that is by far, because, I mean, in this, that wasn't a serialized show, really, so it's like, you know, it's almost like, how are you going to end a show that really has, you know, it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Bam.
Yeah.
The two I have to say that are kind of honorable mentions and really are the final Carson Tonight Show.
And
the final week of Conan's Tonight
Show.
Carson just, you know, bringing the end. I mean, Bette Midler singing to him was just... And I didn't really, at that time, really watch Carson, but I just thought it was beautiful.
I watched it religiously, and I loved it.
Conan, I watched, and then I kind of fell off for a bit, and then when all the shit happened, and then that last week of him just being like, I'm doing whatever, and what am I going
to
do?
To me, Conan, I'm so mad I didn't think of this first. Conan on his last show, going out on the credits, playing Freebird.
Yeah.
And he's actually playing guitar, Will Ferrell singing, and they're doing I thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Do you have any more? That was the end of my list.
Yeah.
I feel like we should mention it, because it's always brought up with finales, and it is pretty good. It's a little before our time, but the final episode of MASH.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
I think, discover that, you know, because it was a great way to remind everybody that it was a show about war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how bad that is, and, you know, and also this season, the series finale of Cheers.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
Cheers was a good
because I really got into Cheers about the next to last season.
The one that I had on my list because it was such an important show to me was the series finales of The X-Files.
Okay.
Where Mulder and Scully, who had gone through everything and ended up in a hotel room talking just like they did in the pilot episode. It was such a beautiful way to kind of wrap that whole show up, because I think that show too kind of changed the way sci-fi was looked at on regular basic cable. So
no, that was actually network.
Network.
That's
Fox.
Fox.
I meant network. So it kind of paved the way for a lot of sci-fi that's on network now. The X-Files did. So that one to me is wonderful. But there you go.
Yeah, I mean it's good when a TV show can leave on top, or in the case of Roseanne, leave on the bottom.
Can we pick a number one out of those?
Well,
Newhart.
I got it. Well, yeah. Because like here's the thing:
the unexpectedness of it is they
crafted it so well. And,
the unexpected and the awesome of it to have Suzanne Plachet there on the set of the original show. I mean, nobody would have guessed that.
I mean, they even had the second Daryl even spoke in that last episode.
And I do have to say though, I mean, thankfully that happened, that show, when it did before the internet, because there's no way that would have.
Survived.
Couldn't have kept that a secret. You know?
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. So does this take us to the end?
Yes, takes us.
All
to
right.
The end.
I think really to sum up, Quentin Tarantino is really good at picking soundtrack songs, and his gift for that is almost as awesome as Apollonia's tits.
Yeah.
I'm old and I like disco. Derwin wants to have sex with my mom. We all really like Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Beyonce should have never been in Goldfinger. And,
gold member,
my bad.
She shouldn't have been in Goldfinger. I hope
she
didn't.
She might have been conceived to Goldfinger.
TV
I don't
shows
know.
Are awesome. We bow down before Newhart. Everybody agrees the last season of Roseanne sucked.
Yeah.
And we all think that everything else is really cool. We like making top five lists because we're geeks and or nerds and or dorks or one of the three. You guys can decide for yourself.
And dork geeks.
But in the meantime,
probably going to be more of these coming, I would assume.
In the meantime, we'll keep in touch with you on our Twitter account, which is Pop Culture House on Twitter.
And feel free to suggest top five lists.
Yes, we would love to hear from you.
If they're asinine, we'll probably tell you right here and say, you are a fucking idiot for suggesting that.
Check us out on Twitter. You can also check me out on Twitter, Anthony Donovan at Daboy, DABOY.
I'm at Craze Dr. Scott.
Dura Murray is at Regis Swing.
Nah, I don't like the Twitter.
Jesus
and
Christ.
Amy's just herself. She's not on Twitter.
F my lawn.
My day. All right. So we'll catch y'all later with more top fives or what's going on that week. So, peace out.
Later.
See ya.
Word.
How's the family?